what happened today? It's Wednesday. Once again, another wonderful... I'm going to start calling them Wonderful Wednesdays. No, Wacky Wednesdays, Weird Wednesdays, Wilson Wednesdays, something else that rhymes with a W and goes with Wednesdays, but I don't know. It's happy after rotten evening once again, everybody, and tonight we have on the show Christine Morgan, who is a fairly prodigious author of some novels and some short stories and stuff. How's it going, Christine?
Hi, it's going all right. Thank you for having me.
Are you melting yet?
I am. I may have grown up in the desert, but I left it as soon as I was old enough, and now I'm back.
Ooh, which desert?
Used to it. I grew up in the Mojave Desert in Lancaster.
Ooh, nice. I've heard of the Mojave Desert. It's a little warm there, right?
A little, yeah.
Little bit warm.
But last year I moved from Portland into the house that used to be my grandparents in Southern California. And yeah, I'm definitely no longer acclimated to the sunshine and the heat.
Excellent. In the unexcellent form.
Yeah.
So I've been to California maybe a couple of times, but only to San Jose and San Francisco.
Okay.
How far away from that area? Are you in earthquake zones?
I'm in the Los Angeles area. Close enough to Knott's Berry Farm that we can hear their fireworks at night.
Oh, that could be either good or bad. Oh, you have critters, right?
Yeah, well, it's not super loud. It's just this distant whomp whomp that...
Okay, well, I get the, Friday is Canada Day, which is our big anniversary, like yours is July 4th, the following Monday. And I know for a fact people will be firing off fireworks over there, and over there, and over there. And I'll hear them, because it echoes quite well.
Here, too, they're not legal, because everything is so dry that it's all been on fire already. But I know people are still going to be out there shooting them off.
Shooting them off because they've got nothing better to do except destroy things.
Yep.
Which in and of itself, I'm okay with the destroying of things, but it's like I destroy my things, not other people's things.
Right, yeah. You know, don't burn down everyone else's house.
Yeah, have fun, but not at somebody else's expense.
I think that's fair.
All cool. So I just wanted to throw in this. You have some interesting entitled books. I when Bailey suggested saying, hey, Christine's a good person to chat with, it's like, okay, cool. And then I looked up some of your books and it's like, interesting. I like that one. I like the name of that one. It's like, what the hell is that one?
Yeah, you know, I have that conversation a lot. People say, oh, you're a writer. And it's like, okay, now look, before you look me up online, I just want to get this out in front. And they'll be all like, oh, no, come on, you're so nice. How bad could it be? But Sperm Jackers from Hell pretty much shuts down the conversation in a hurry.
Excellent. And why Sperm Jackers from Hell?
Well, because I wanted to write a book for my dear friend Jeff Burke at Deadite Press. And at the time he was the editor over there, and Jeff loves him some trash.
Who doesn't?
My original title for it had been something like, you know, Dream Demons something something, and I was like, nope, that's not trashy enough. I'm just gonna go balls out and call it Sperm Jackers from Hell. And it gets a lot of attention. Between the title and Jim Adpalz's sexy blue naked demon cover art, it's a real sensation at book sales and conventions.
Well, yes.
But yeah, I wanted to write. I mean, I've been reading extreme horror ever since I discovered it. I love it. That's where my heart truly is. And to get a book with Deadite was one of those bucket list kind of goals. And I just wanted to do something completely crazy and have fun with it. So I describe it as the movie Weird Science.
I love that movie.
By way of Edward Lee.
Him's good too, but I love that movie.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's about a bunch of dudes, you know, sitting around, smoking weed, playing video games, who come up with this brilliant idea to summon a succubus to fulfill all their sexual fantasies.
Like guys do.
Like you do, yeah, yeah. And to their surprise, it works. To their much greater surprise, they do not actually get the sexy naked demon chick. They get something a lot squishier.
And, squishy!
Yeah, and it turns into a whole creature feature with these nasty monster slug things oozing around, collecting sperm like bees and taking it back to their hive. Yeah, it...
I have a few movies to recommend for you.
I may have seen them. Edward Lee sends me movies to watch all the time.
Oh, suggest what?
Oh gosh, let's see. He sent me one called Skins.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's about it's about people with birth deformities or differences.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main characters is a young woman whose anus is where her mouth should be and the other way around. Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that that Ed Lee sends you when you're...
That's good. That's good.
Yeah,
good to know. There's a whole bunch of movies like that.
Yeah.
There's one movie that I cut the... I won't watch it simply because of its content. It's called Zombie Ass, Toilet of the Dead.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's about shit zombies. And I'll watch pretty much anything zombie, but it's like, nope, I'm not watching that one.
Yeah, one of my other weaknesses is bad shark movies, and boy, there's a lot of those, too.
I watched one a couple weeks ago. Tell me
Which
if you've
one?
Seen this one. Virus Shark.
No, I haven't seen that one.
It's what really clicked on me. It's like, well, look, the graphic looked cool for the image for the movie and everything. It's like, that's cool. So when I'm watching, it's like, oh, this is bad. This is not like terrible, but it's like, oh, this is not really good quality. So after watching it, because I will watch it anyways, I looked it up on IMDb, and it's like, the budget was $182.
I bet it showed, yeah.
It was better than the budget. Woohoo! Oh, yeah,
yeah,
there's
no,
Shark
I've
of the...
I've got some like that where, you know, you see the poster or something, and you think, hey, that looks pretty good, and then it turns out that all the effort and effects budgets went into the poster.
Yes. Velocipaster.
Like, yes, yes.
I love that movie.
I wasn't going to say it by name, but you did, so
yes.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of.
I love that movie. It's so... What the hell did you guys do? And it's like, it fits. Totally fits.
But yeah, you look at the poster and you think, hey, this looks pretty cool. And then you get into it and it's like...
It's like a guy with duct tape hands.
Yeah. Oh, I know. What a trailer.
<That's awesome. laughs> Now, one that in the same vein, but where they actually pull no punches and actually put together a good movie with a simple plot twist that's weird. Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's a classic. That's one of those holiday movies.
Yes, holiday movies. So, with this movie, this book, Spermjackers from Hell, which I can say quite easily because, like, okay, I know what a succubus is. Why a succubus? Was it just, did you start with a succubus or did you start with, I just want to mess with people?
No, I started with a succubus because...
Excellent.
I've always been interested in the idea of them, you know, as a demon, and how really, in the lore, a succubus and an incubus are the same thing. Mm-hmm. And the succubus will collect sperm from sleeping men and then transform into an incubus and impregnate sleeping women.
Lovely.
Which,
so the transitional,
you know,
thing
kind of sounds like a convenient excuse for unexplainable pregnancies, like the way that, you know, ancient Greek women always used to blame Zeus.
No.
It's like, I don't know how it happened.
It just sort of happened. I was drinking with the girls and some things showed up and then it was an incubus.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, so I wanted to explore that. And my plan eventually, assuming I ever clear through all my to-do list, is to do a sequel.
Excellent.
That will be called Baby Daddies of the Damned. That finishes the story, because by now all the succubi have collected everything they need, and then they're going to go after the women in town and kind of get that midwitch cuckoo's thing going on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great big ball of fun.
It's funny, though, because my favorite one-star review for Spermjackers from Hell was from a very indignant person who claimed that clearly the author didn't know what a succubus was. And I'm like, that's the whole entire point of the book. That they are not the hot little bat-winged naked demon chick right out of your Dungeons and Dragons monster manual.
Well, there's a bunch of other things that say it as well. But again, I mean, artistic license. You write something, it's like whatever it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah. My other favorite one-star review was from, it was from Lake House Infernal, which was, who told you it was okay to write like this?
Well, they obviously haven't been around the Bizarro scene much, have they?
Quite a few people.
Quite a few people, yes. There's even a couple of them make a fairly good bit of money on it, too.
Yes, indeed.
I met a couple of them. They're nice people. This is why I find it funny always when somebody says, oh, you really do this? And it's like, have you met some of the people I know? They're like the nicest people in the world, but really, they come up with some really weird shit.
Well, and that too, exactly. I've been part of the community for many years now. I've been to Killer Con several
Excellent.
Times. And yeah, some of the people who write the sickest shit are the sweetest people in real life.
And willing to help you with stuff and just be nice in general.
And a lot of us are squeamish as anything. And people think, well, you know, that we're all out here, like, mutilating corpses in our spare time. And I mean, I'm squeaky about everything.
Okay.
You know, I don't like making meatballs because I have to get my hands all mushy, right? Jeff Burke from Deadite, he and I both have really phobic reactions to anything involving, like, eyeballs or manics.
Oh, I can relate to that one.
Yeah.
It's
no,
like,
eyeballs
are cool, but when something's coming really close to my eye, not so much.
Yeah, I've worn glasses since I was 6 years old. My grandmother used to say that she would pay for the contacts, and it was like, yeah, but I'd have to touch my eyeball. And that was enough. I will wear glasses for the rest of my life as long as I don't have to touch my eyeball. Thank you very much. But yeah, there's a lot of that. And I think that's what makes so many of us effective at what we do. Because we can tap into our own sense of revulsion and horror and really kind of get the sensory experience going in there.
Yeah, and if you're really good, you can translate it from one kind of sensory impression to another, and it's like, effectively emote that stuff.
Yeah. No, and it's like, and I also read and edit and review a lot as well, and I gotta give a shout out to Ryan Harding.
Hi, Ryan Harding.
He is at the top of my "that nearly made me puke" leaderboard. And of course, just recently, Mr. Patrick C. Harrison III, I read his new book, Grandpappy, and that one came mighty close, too. That awesome. One drove me to drink, and I don't normally drink.
What, drinking water?
No, wine.
Oh, wine.
I'm not only squeamish as hell, I'm a pathetic lightweight, so...
Meh.
For me to be driven to drink is really something, and I know it makes me an oddity again among the community where, you know, some of those guys can put away stuff that would kill me dead.
I'll one-up you. I drink maybe once a year.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, it's whiskey, but... And I have no problem whatsoever drinking a bunch of it. It's just I don't feel a need for it.
Yeah, no. One glass of wine and I'm usually slumped over sideways.
Gotcha.
Staring at the television.
I think the last time I actually imbibed in any kind of real quantity was approximately 25 years ago, and that was about a half a bottle of Jack.
Oof.
Yeah, I'm still walking around fine.
Yeah, that would kill me.
Oh, well then don't do that.
No, no.
Probably not recommended for people when you're not doing that sort of thing on a regular basis. So, let's talk about some of the other books. Oh, Horror okay. Smut.
Horror Smut, yes.
I love that name.
That one just came out a couple of weeks ago. And that's also Ed Lee's fault. I'm going to blame a lot of stuff on him.
Yeah, Ed Lee, it's your fault.
Yes, because some time ago, he had asked me if I had any, you know, dirty horror stories sitting around. Which I did, because I had been writing them for years to post on the Literonica site, mostly to see how much I could get away with and how far I could push their rules. Because, you know, they had a, like, no bestiality rule, but they would bend it for, like, werewolves, and, I mean, shifter form is a huge.
And minotaurs!
So I'm thinking, well, how about Pasiphae and the Bull? And so I wrote my minotaur porn story.
Nice.
So I had a bunch of stuff like that, and I put them all together into a collection at Lee's urging. And he had me pitch it to one of his German publishers, but they weren't. Yeah, I get apparently Germany is really where it's at for the horror.
Yeah. But I've heard some stuff.
Yeah, they didn't have a place for it at the time, so I kicked it around for a while, and then I tried K. Trap Jones at Evil Cookie, and he basically read it in one night, offered me a contract the next day, and the book itself was out within a month.
Nice. I know those guys.
But yeah, it's a collection of most of my dirtiest stuff.
Minotaur porn, witches, angels and demons, ancient bat gods, brutal Viking nastiness, hunger, perversion and revenge, a freaky pumpkin monster, all kinds of bodily fluids. Ew.
Yeah. Now, the Viking story was originally in the Splatterlands anthology, and they changed the title with my permission, but they felt the original title gave too much away. So they changed it to The Defiled, and it has not appeared in either of my other collections because I was waiting on something else that didn't pan out. But when I put it in Horror Smut, it was like, all right, we're going with its original title, which is The Gut Fuckers.
Sorry, I like that.
You were warned. You knew what you were getting into here.
I have zero problem with any of it. I have seen a whole bunch of different types of things, so it doesn't bother me in the least.
Oh, good.
Like I said, I've known a few different bizarro authors, and it's like, you want a what? No, not me. No. You can do that. That's all fun games for you. That's fine. Enjoy. Yep. If you get a market for it, work it.
Yep. Yeah, so that one just came out, yes.
Nice. So I see a whole butt ton, and I use that reference all the time with absolutely no relevance whatsoever to anything you've said so far.
Right now, you're in Canada, though, so that's a metric butt ton, right?
A metric butt ton, that is correct, which is bigger than an imperial butt ton by about a ratio of 1.5 or so. I don't remember.
Yeah.
The translations I don't really give a shit for. You have a whole bunch of short stories.
Yes,
some of
I
these
do.
Have really neat names.
Okay.
7 Brains, 10 Minutes.
Ah, yes. That was, that one appears in my collection, Dawn of the Living Impaired and Other Messed Up Zombie Stories.
Awesome.
It was my second ever pro sale. And it came about because we were watching the, 4th of July Nathan's hot dog eating competition. And I started thinking, you know, as one does, I wonder what that would be like with zombies. And so I wrote this story about a guy who actually is not a zombie, but he disguises himself as a zombie to infiltrate the survivor's camp to try and rescue a girl. And he winds up in the competitive brain eating contest. And so they've got this line of victims, like, strapped into a board, like a pillory, with the tops of their heads cut off, and then the zombies doing the, like, pie-eating contest thing with their just, you know, no hands, diving face-first into the skull.
I love that image.
That one, may have partially contributed to my, less than great relationship with my in-laws at the time, because my father-in-law was a psychology professor. He was one of my professors, in fact. And so I was asking him, you know, about physical type brain stuff, like, you know, if you cut the top of someone's skull off and what all. And so we had this great conversation about it.
He didn't know what it was for.
Not so amused, and that was, little awkward holidays, but
that's hilarious.
But yeah.
Yes. What happens if you cut at the little medulla oblongata or whatever? You do that. What happens? Well, the leg twitches like this, and then it's like whatever. It's like, oh, okay, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Any others there catching your eye?
Oh, they all, a lot of them all catch my eye. But I just wanted to say, just so you know, there is an actual porn movie called Porn of the Dead. I don't watch a lot of porn movies, but that one caught me because it was a nickname and play on Night of the Living Dead. Sorry, it was Porn of the Living Dead. It's about a zombie orgy and a zombie outbreak as a result. It's like, wait, what?
I am not surprised, actually.
Stupid and funny. But yes, they will do that all over the place. But one thing I am catching is I'm getting a bit of Nordic stuff going through here, too.
Yes.
I see Odin's Eye, and I see a couple of other things as well.
Yes, one of my other great loves is mythology and history, particularly Viking history.
Excellent.
And
so, I'm going to test you.
Huh?
I'm going to test you on
is there
something.
A test? Uh-oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Draugr.
Huh?
Draugrs.
Draugrs are the drowned dead. They're the Viking equivalent of zombies, and I have them in some of my stories, too.
Excellent. You passed.
But yeah, that one came about because, you know, I'd been into fantasy, you know, played role-playing games, was into Lord of the Rings and all that, but the Viking era for me was where it really all came together. And I think a lot of it had to do also with the language and the cadence and the style. And you can get away with really outlandish purple prose when you're writing Viking style. I was listening on audiobook to one of Bernard Cornwell's Saxon stories, and there was a line that, you know, I'm driving along on my way to work, and the line was something like, the sucking backwash of the blood touched water. And I was like, wow, that was what I wanted to do. So my first zombie story, well, I mean my first Viking story, which is also a zombie story, was called The Barrow Maid, and it appeared in the anthology History is Dead, which was about what happens when a Viking known as the Unkillable gets killed in battle, but then comes back to take revenge on the guys who are raiding his burial mound.
Which is the basic concept of a Draugr.
Yeah.
Yes.
And from there, I mean, it was just for a while, every themed anthology call that I ran across, I would challenge myself and say, all right, how can you Viking that up? And I came out of it with some really fun stories that I might not otherwise have done. I think one of the best of them was for an anthology call for Robert Chambers type stories, you know, The King in Yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I saw something in yellow in the list of movies. Stories.
All I had to do was add two letters, and I had The Viking in Yellow. And
yes.
I think it's one of the best things I've ever written, actually. It creeps me out just thinking about it.
Well, it should. That's what it's supposed to. Yeah.
But no, yeah, I love my Vikings. I have two collections, The Raven's Table and The Wolf's Feast, both available from Wordhorn Press, that collect... all of them up to, except for the last few. And, you know, and some of them are silly. One of them is called High School Mythical, that is, you know, presents it as, you know, the gods are students at Asgard High, and, you know, they're the big game, they're fighting the big game against the giants, and I don't know, I just got silly with it, and I don't know, it's just so much fun to play with the lore and the language and twist it around.
Absolutely. Have you ever heard of Robin Aspirin?
Robert Aspirin, yeah.
Yes. I was getting that as a bit of a theme there. It's like, yeah, I used to read his stuff all the time.
Yeah, Myth Inc. with the trolls, and I
all
have
that stuff
sitting around here somewhere.
And what's his face? Oh, crap. Piers Anthony with his Magic of Xanth series.
Oh, yeah. So that one got real creepy real fast.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
And not necessarily for the exact... Well, if you'd ever read any of his earlier stuff, you'd know why they were creepy. He did some creepy fantasy stuff.
I believe it. But there were just a few too many panties for, you know... girls and panties for my liking in those.
Well, the one thing I had to say, give the guy credit for, is he got hit by a car, was laid up in the hospital for 6 months, and wrote two books while he was in the hospital.
Yeah, that's, you know, I was in the hospital 5 years ago for surgery for cancer. I had cancer in my face. That's why I talk like this.
Okay. Well, congratulations for beating it.
Thank you. Yeah, and actually, Spermjackers from Hell came out while I was in the hospital. Rosa Keefe, the publisher of Eraserhead Press, brought me my copy to my hospital room.
Nice.
Yeah. Though the chaplain never came back to visit me after that.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I've been sick for a little while. I wrote this book. You should read it. It's like...
I was just sitting there on the little table. But yeah.
It's like his head turned around like in The Exorcist. Except he was not the one spitting out the pea soup.
Yeah. But yeah, recovering from surgery was a hell of a thing, and, you know, anyone who can write while they're dealing with all that is definitely got it together more than I did.
Yeah, and I understand it being a cathartic process, like, okay, this is how you focus your mind so that you're not focused on the pain or discomfort of stuff. It's like, okay, I'm just doing this, and that's cool. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, all that just really keeps coming over, right? I mean, you got pain. You're going to recognize that and keep going with that.
And I was on a lot of medication, and like I said, I'm a lightweight, so some of what I was thinking got pretty screwed up in there for a while.
It's some of the best writing, right? That's what they keep saying about writers. Drink some absinthe and you can write some weird shit and it'll be possible. Cool. It's like, no.
No.
All I have to do is fall asleep, wake up. It's like, hey, look, I wrote some stuff. Oh, okay, cool.
Then that's what I do. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's like, what the hell does that word mean? Oh, shit, that's what it's supposed to mean. Okay, right word.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. So I see you got a couple of poems, only three, though.
Of poems?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I have, when it comes to poetry, and this is something else, but there are so many people in the genre who write horror poetry, and it's fantastic. I have two settings. I can either do a Viking saga or fucked up Dr. Seuss. That is it.
Excellent. Those are good options.
That's all I got. So I love to read it. I love listening to the authors read it. I can't do it myself to save my life. But yeah, the Viking sagas, those are in the collections as well, and those are a lot of fun.
Excellent. Do you ever get into anything else besides the Norse stuff?
Oh yeah. On the mythology side, I'm also into Greek and Roman and ancient Egyptian, and I've done several stories based on like Mesoamerican mythology,
okay,
the Mayans,
cool,
and such.
Yep.
Really like that. We did a family cruise once to the Yucatan to watch the equinox at Chichen Itza. The sun, the position of the sun makes the shadow of the snake go down the pyramid.
Oh, okay, cool.
So yeah, that was really cool. I mean, again, it was way too damn hot.
Well, it was an Amazon jungle, so
yeah, but it was fascinating and beautiful in its way.
Lots of bugs.
Yeah, that too.
This is why I don't go places like that. It's like, there's a lot of bugs there. Yeah, get me a bodysuit. I'll go. No, no bodysuit? No, I'm not going.
But yeah, those mythologies. History, I love doing historical fiction of almost any era, partly because I'm not very technological, and so I don't have to worry about all the newfangled stuff that I don't understand.
Quantum computing.
Yeah. But, you know, I've written stuff set as far back as Mesopotamia, and my story in the Bludgeon Tools anthology is called Sticks and Stones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, right at the very, you know, when hominids first picked up rocks to kill each other.
Ooh, like in 2001.
Yeah.
The movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, history, I love it. Again, a lot of it for the language, because it offers so much variety. I wrote a splatter western for the Death's Head Press series called The Night Silver River Run Red.
Cool.
And that's all in that western dialect and cadence and language that is so different from the Viking. I write stuff in the style of P.G. Woodhouse with his, you know, kind of Jeeves and Wooster voice. You know, just everything. I love to play with it.
Excellent. You seem to write a lot of different stuff. I mean, a lot of these short stories, yeah, are they like 5,000-word stories, 1,000-word stories? I mean, what's their average length?
I tend to run long because I'm having too much fun. So, yeah, writing short stuff for me, you know, under 1,000 is a big challenge. I think I've done, like, maybe 2 flash fic pieces ever. So most are probably in the, you know, 5,000 to 8,000 ballpark.
So you're not a drabble person?
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
I experimented with my first drabbles earlier this year. It was like, what the hell? 100 words? How the hell do you do this shit?
Yeah, and I know. I have trouble just with Twitter.
The 100 and... Oh, sorry. How many characters is that?
Yeah, like 70? 140 or something. I don't know. Yeah. I run into that wall so often at first.
It's like it's a crazy, crazy, crazy world. I mean, the whole thing with all most of the social media. So speaking of social medias, I find that most social media nowadays is a very short attention span, and this is why most of my Twitters when I do or Instagram posts for the show, I usually do it like an hour before because I find that most people don't react when you do it for a couple of days ahead. They, oh, I forgot about that. It's like, that's why I tagged you in it.
Yeah, well, and I mean, there's so much going on right now, and it's all coming at us so damn fast.
Yes.
It's hard to keep up with anything. I
Well, you just hit it with a stick and
Yeah.
then a stone,
I
and then it
wish.
leaves you alone.
I wish.
Yeah. So let's go into some nuts and bolts stuff. When
Okay.
you're doing your writing, what kind of like do you have a chaotic environment or an organized environment, or is it some kind of mix that you work with?
Well, for most of my writing, and I'm still not comfortable enough to use the word without air quotes, career, I wrote while I was at my, again, air quotes, real job. I worked the overnight shift in residential psychiatric facilities.
Cool.
And so I did most of my writing on the company clock when things were quiet.
Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, well, they kind of knew, but they didn't really
Oh,
care
okay.
as long as, you know, if the shit did hit the fan, I was there to deal with it.
Excellent.
But what it meant, aside from getting, you know, a pretty decent hourly wage to write, even if I hadn't sold anything yet, was that I could not have a routine because it was always going to be dependent on how that night went at work. Some
Right.
nights I get there, say goodbye to swing shift, and not see anybody until day shift showed up the next morning. Other nights, the whole damn house would be up and freaking out or wanting stuff or setting things on fire or whatever constantly. So I could never rely on a routine. And I'm kind of both envious and in awe of people who have that. Because it's like,
Cool.
wow, you know. And then when I left that job, it was to move in to this house that used to be my grandparents' as my mother's live-in caretaker. So it's basically the same thing, only now it's 24/7. And what I can do during any particular day depends on how she's doing.
Ah.
You know, when I mentioned to you earlier, there might be interruptions. You know, right now she's in watching TV, so hostess.
Excellent.
But you know, if she needs something, she'll come barging right on in.
Absolutely. And then I'll just talk for a little while and it'll be all fine.
Yep.
Because I do that. I talk a lot. A lot of talk. Talk, talk, talk. It's
But
what I
yes,
do.
so I still don't have a routine. You
Okay.
know, and I know that for the people who do and they have those things like, you know, so many words a day or that structure, you know, again, I admire and I envy them because I'm just, you know, taking it when I can. And so, you know, I can't do so many words a day. Some days, if things are going great, I can write, you know, a 5,000 word story in a day. Other days, I'm, you know, lucky to get a few hundred words, if at all.
Well, I think you've got a good spread going there because I mean, I'm looking at from 2001 to 2022, about 100 stories. If they're an average of 5,000 words, that's 500,000 words just on short stories, not including the novels.
Excuse me.
No
Yeah,
worries.
I mean, and that works for me. I just often feel, you know, when I hear people talk about, well, you gotta do so many words a day, it's like, I
I think that's bupkis. You work with whatever
I know.
mode that works for you or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that a lot, especially of newer writers have trouble realizing is that what works for one person might not work for someone else.
Exactly.
You know, and it's going to be different for everybody. And you got to find what meshes with your style and your, you know, your schedule and your habits.
Absolutely. It's all about balance. It's like I always talk about darkness and then I talk about brightness. And then at the same point, it's all about the balance between the two. You're going to be somewhere in the spectrum, somewhere along that line.
Yeah.
But I do have to go back to the psychiatric, was it a ward or was it an actual full institution?
It was a residential treatment facility, what's sometimes known as a halfway house.
Okay, so not a special restrictions thing.
Yeah, they would move from the hospital to our place to work on, you know, getting their daily living skills and managing their own medications before
reintegrating into society.
Their own apartment.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, okay, because I was going to go to that. It's like, that must have had some good atmosphere to work in.
Oh, my God. One of the houses I worked at, I've been working there for almost 2 years by this point, and I worked the night shift.
Yeah, that's another reason why atmosphere.
Yeah, and it was quiet. Nobody was up. And I was looking for more cleaning products, because when you're on the night shift, they stick you with all the janitorial stuff. And I opened a door that I had never opened before, because I thought maybe it was a supply closet. And it was a dark, spooky staircase down to a dark, spooky basement.
Yes! The beginning of every horror movie!
And I'm standing there at the top of the stairs thinking, I worked here 2 years, and now I find this, and it would be professionally embarrassing to go down there and die. So I shut the door and locked it again. Just went back to the office. It was like, that was just too real right then.
That's called the smart move.
No, thank you. Nope.
It's like, this sounds like a horror movie? Nope.
Yeah.
Turning back, going the other way.
I have read too many books and seen too many movies to go down there and look around.
Exactly.
At, you know, 2:30 in the morning.
Well, yeah, and besides, if you're the only... So, when we talk about this, I'm thinking... have you seen The Exorcist 3?
Yeah.
With the scene with the in the hospital where the nurse just walks by and then all of a sudden that just takes right out. It's like, what? It was awesome.
Yeah, and on night shift, we usually worked by ourselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was nobody else, no other staff in the house during my shift.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
Atmosphere. I'm just sticking with the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But yes, I can understand how it can be a difficult thing to deal with as well. Because like, hey, you're one person. There's how many people here? What if they all go and decide to do something all at once? You can only deal with one at a time.
And it did occasionally, you know, just dealing with the residents gave me some good material. You know, I've used quotes from some of them in stories. There was a lady who I still remember. She came up to the office, and our exchange went something like, she said, "The devil stole my cigarettes," and all I could think of was to say, "I don't think the devil would smoke menthols." And, you know, I wound up using that in a story sometime down the line, but it just always stuck with me. It's like, that you just get the weirdest shit out of nowhere.
That's
or, you know, we
excellent.
Had a guy once who was pacing around the dining room and muttering to himself, and he was all angry. And it was like, oh, boy, he's going to get all worked up. So I went out to ask him what was wrong, and he looked right at me, and he said, "What was the third little pig's house made out of?" And I said, "Bricks." And he says, "Oh, right." And then he went to bed. And it was like, dude, if I knew that was what was bothering you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to leave that with that one because it's like, I currently work across from a facility and we have some unusual people walking around in the neighborhood. And it's like, I'm not going to engage because I don't want to get involved in that discussion.
Yeah.
But it's all good. The people got to do what the people got to do, right?
Yep, that they do.
So in the same vein, do you go to conventions at all much nowadays? Minus the whole COVID part right now until that's cleaned up.
Yeah, it was always a challenge because residential psych is perpetually short-staffed. Mm-hmm. So getting time off was always hard enough. But my two main ones for the past, several years were BizarroCon in Portland. Mm-hmm. And KillerCon, first in Las Vegas, and now it's in Austin. Cool. And I would go to anything else that was, within range and budget. I went to RadCon in the Tri-Cities of Washington many, many years. Went to World Horror a few times, but in general, not nearly as many as I'd like to. Partly for getting time off and partly for finances and all that.
Right.
I love going to conventions. I love hanging out with my people. It's being a writer is a lonely enough life anyway. And it's like when I was also working the night shift by myself, I wouldn't see anyone all night. I'd sleep all day. My interactions with other humans were fairly limited.
That's what we got computers for.
Right. Oh, I know. That is definitely, that's where all my social life is now.
Excellent. And do you spend any much time on the online stuff trying to promote your material and stuff?
That's my social life is mostly on Facebook and Twitter. And I try to promote, though I know I'm not doing it as diligently as I ought to, because, I still feel kind of guilty about it, or like I'm being a pain in the ass.
There's levels where you go too far, or you don't go too far, and people just balance.
Yeah. So I try, but I also post just all kinds of, I post about shark movies, I post about my cat. About adventures here with the house and with the mom, about the weird crafts that I do, random stuff that happens. I don't know.
Yeah, and this is the thing I like to see when I'm talking about stuff. It's like, you got your thing, saying, I'm selling this. This is what I made. I hope you like it. But by the way, as well, I'm also a human being. Here's some fun stuff.
Yeah. And during the course of my cancer surgery, Facebook was my outlet.
Right.
And I probably overshared like crazy. Because,
dude, no. Some people overshare on Facebook. Yeah, Trust me.
It was too much information. It was boring medical details. It was pictures. And yet, I did it because it helped me to get it out.
Exactly.
But then it turned out it also helped people who saw it, who were suffering with their own medical troubles and all that, mm-hmm. but didn't want to splash their guts all over Facebook.
Yep.
And they saw me doing it and, trying to deal with it with a sense of humor, because a sense of humor is really all that got me through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can... I can joke about my messed up face and my, lack of decent ability to speak anymore, because, I was there. It happened. It was real. I have to live with it every day. I'm not going to pretend it didn't. And if I can't laugh at it, then, the alternative is way too depressing.
Yep.
That is
absolutely correct.
Yeah. And if that helps someone else approach their own problems, with a little more of a sense of humor, or if a wimp like Christine can get through this, then so can I. If it helps someone else too, then so much the better. I'm really glad to be able to to share my worrying medical details if it helps someone else.
And I can say nothing but excellent, because that's something that I believe strongly in. Well, if you can't laugh at your own problems, everybody else will as well, but you need to have the stiffer upper lip to just say, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, this is it. I will say, though, that with all the COVID stuff, I like wearing a mask when I go out, mm-hmm. because it covers my disfigurement and I can almost
Pass
for normal. You know, so it's not just because of the COVID. It's like, hey, you know, if I go to the grocery store with my mask on, people might look at me and think I'm a, you know, paranoid weirdo, but they're not gonna see my face and go, ew, what the hell happened to her?
I have a very simple answer to that, because this is my reason why I will still continue to wear a mask, even after, still have they've reduced the restrictions or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you people realize how badly you smell? I can smell you. I can smell you 6 feet away from me. I have such a sensitive sense of smell. I can smell you walk into the room.
Okay, well, see, on that one, we're opposite, because the cancer was in my sinuses, and I now have no sense of smell.
Yeah.
Which, like, when COVID came along and they're talking about people losing their sense of smell, it's like, well...
Right. You already had it missing before then, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I know. It's like, how am I supposed to know? But it's funny. At the time, I was upset, but it has turned out, you know, working in a residential psychiatric setting.
Yes.
And
I was going to say, there are smells there. It's like, no, I could not do this. No, I could not do that.
It has turned out to be much more of a blessing than a curse. One year at KillerCon, during the gross out contest.
I've heard about those.
Yeah. Jeff Burke decided that he would do a kind of performance eating piece where he ate, I don't know, pickled anchovies and all sorts of gross stuff, including durian fruit, which is notorious for being the worst smelling thing ever. And, you know, so people all around me are gagging and crying and leaving the room. And I'm just sitting there going, this isn't so bad.
Well, so you won that gross out.
It's like, hey, never thought I'd be glad to have had cancer in my face, but here we are.
There's always a plus to everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's there if you look for it, or if you don't, just sort of find it anyway.
But like I said, there's absolutely no reason why anybody should be thinking anything bad about anybody wearing a mask, because it's like person's choices are been important to them.
Oh, yeah, I know. And I haven't had anybody, you know, come at me about it.
Oh, I have.
You know, and we went, Mom and I went to a Memorial Day ceremony at one of the cemeteries near here, and we showed up, and I think we were the only two wearing masks.
Right.
And as soon as she saw nobody else was, she took hers off. So I felt a little awkward there, but it was like, still, I'd rather have them think I'm scared of catching the COVID than have them wonder what the hell happened to my face.
Well, it's like, even without the COVID, So many germs are spread by so many people. Some of them are bad. Some of them are probably harmless. But at the same point, I mean, look at different cultures all over the world now. I mean, you look at Tokyo and Japan. They mask anyways because there's smog and other issues as well. But
we haven't had the flu seasons nearly as bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I agree.
I mean, even now they're talking about monkeypox. It's like, okay, that's not what I want either.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was bird flu, and there's always something.
Yeah. So, I'm going to change this concept to another thing. Do you read any comic books?
Not as much now. I did when I was younger. I have the complete run of ElfQuest.
Okay.
And I was... when I was an X-Men New Mutants fan.
Okay.
When I was doing comics.
Did you
But
keep number 98?
I have no idea, because my problem with comic books is if I don't like the art, I lose interest in the story.
Gotcha.
And some of the art got really liney and not to my taste.
Right.
So, you know, so I don't have very many. I mean, I have Joe Hill's Lock and Key graphic novels and
Yep.
other things
Good
like
series.
that. Huh?
Good series.
Yeah. But not so much. Not so much since then.
Okay, well, in the sense of the bizarro horror stuff, there's a lot of bizarro horror comics out there as well now, too. There's a series called Cursed. It's like a zombie plague outbreak, but it's more than an insanity type thing where they get into some really weird stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
yeah,
a movie.
I know there's a lot of really crazy stuff out there, and I've been diligently watching The Boys, but I have not read any of the graphic novels. I love that show.
The Boys is awesome. It's so much cringe, and it's awesome.
Oh, it's fantastic.
First scene of the new season this season is like, oh, that's gross.
Yeah, that was wonderful. That was a thing of beauty.
That was like, no! Oh, crap, I knew it was coming, and it's still gross.
They're really going to go there. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's one of my top three all-time favorite shows, right up there with Gargoyles and Alien Nation.
I loved Alien Nation.
Yes, me too.
It was a good, sedate show. It didn't really push the envelope much for me, but it was fun.
And it did great world building, and I have all the paperbacks that followed the series, too, so.
There's also a comic book series.
Yeah. You know, so I love that kind of stuff. But yeah, and I've seen art from The Boys graphic novel, and it's, you know, kind of not to my taste. So.
Right. Our work in a lot of comics is very varied, and when you look for a long series like The New Mutants or whatever, they go and use the same artist for a while, and then they change.
And then you change it on you, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I like ElfQuest. It's Wendy Feeney all the way through.
All the way through. So but, did you know that The Boys was filmed here?
Yeah, in Toronto.
Yep.
Yeah.
The funniest thing is Vought International, the big corporate headquarters for them.
Uh-huh.
It's like this huge building in the scene that you see it, but it's really only three or four stories high. They digital add everything. And it's like, that's cool. I know where that building is. It does not look like that.
Well, and did they really build a replica Flatiron building there?
A replica which?
The Flatiron building. The one where Huey has his offices now in season 3. That kind of narrow wedge-shaped one.
I don't know. Oh. There's a bunch of stuff that they film here, and they've got studio space all over the place. I don't know. I have to look into that.
Okay, yeah. I saw
now
something
curious.
About that and wasn't sure. But yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me,
I love
in the
that
least.
Though. And I mentioned my weird crafts earlier.
Mm-hmm.
One of my hobbies is I modify fashion dolls like Barbies. So I have a whole series. I have the boys' Barbies. I have the Seven and Stormfront and Huey and Butcher, and I recently made Soldier Boy and Crimson Countess.
Awesome!
So I've got this whole line of of characters sitting up there.
Well, if you ever get the opportunity, check out the Living Dead dolls.
Yeah, I've seen those. Those are fun.
They make their own version similar. It's like, creepy, but
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. This is a whole hour that's gone by chatting about goofy stuff and whatever. So, how do the people find you out in the world to follow and stalk you and get your stuff?
Oh, well, let's see. I have a website for my books and stories and stuff that is ChristineMarieMorgan.wordpress.com, and that's where I post story updates. That's where I post my monthly batches of book reviews, things like that. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. You know, people can email me again, Christine Marie Morgan at gmail.com. I love hearing from folks. And yeah, I'm just basically, once when I was in the hospital, the nurse told my roommate at the time that I was a great patient because I was always either asleep or on the computer. And then she reassured him not to worry because I would be back to my normal levels of activity in no time. Uh-huh. And I'm laying there thinking, bitch, that is my normal levels of activity.
Yeah.
I'm either sleeping or on the computer pretty much all the time. So.
Well, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Christine, thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing us all those lovely details in some wonderfully titled books.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody out there in After Rotten Line, you have yourselves an amazing good time. Come back again every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever the hell time it is, wherever the heck you are. Same bat channel. No, wait, same zombie channel. TMVCafe.com. Come back again. Find us on the Twitter. Find us on the Instagram. Find us on the Facebook and wherever else I end up going to, because I like to wander all over the place because it's fun. You never know what kind of brains you're going to find. Enjoy, be well, be brightness, be shadow, be whatever the hell works for you.